I'm Emily Alphen-Johnson, VPR Digital Producer. I just wanted to let you know that this episode of Vermont Edition has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Porter Medical Center is a fixture in Middlebury, a hospital that has served the region for almost 100 years. But the medical center, which also includes a rehab and senior living facility and many primary care and associated practices in the surrounding community, hit a low point about a year and a half ago. In the process of instituting cuts to deal with serious financial losses, staff morale suffered. Faith in new leader Lynn Boggs was hard to find, and she left after 8 months at the helm. In the shakeout, half of the center's primary care physicians quit. More than a quarter of the nurses did, too. Since then, Porter has been recruiting and rebuilding. And Porter recently joined the University of Vermont Health Network. Today, we're going to check in on how things have changed and where they're going. And I'm joined now by current Porter president and CEO, Dr. Fred Niffen. Nice to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Jane.
So at times last year, you had doctors leaving, you had nurses leaving, you potentially had patients leaving who were worried about what was happening at Porter. How perilous do you think the situation was?
We did, in fact, have all three of those categories leaving. And at this time last year, it was really one of my biggest concerns. I mean, one of the big questions was, if we put the Help Wanted sign out, will they come? And the good news is they have. You know, we had a great year of recruiting, 40 new nurses, 10 new primary care docs. We've almost rebuilt our primary care network. Middlebury remains a great place to live, and I like to think Porter's a great place to work.
Why did you take the job, given how bad it seemed at the time? And I can say we did a show in February, and yeah. I said this at the time to Ron Holman, who we had on the show. The producer, Rick Singeri, and I of that show fielded calls all weekend from doctors who were really worried or really frustrated by the situation, but felt like they would be retaliated against if they went on the air. We couldn't find a doctor to come on the air. It seemed like it was really bad. And you are and were a doctor. You weren't in the senior management.
So it wasn't in my life plan. In fact, I'd passed our former CEO had retired. And I had one or two people come to me and say, are you going to throw your hat in the ring? And I responded by saying, I'd rather drop a brick on my foot. And, but I got the call on March 18th from the board, our board chair, Maury McLaughlin. And it just felt like the right thing to do. And I thought, how often do you get this opportunity? I did not expect it to be as rewarding as it is. And then, you know, a month later, I was on a bike ride with my wife because I told her, I think this job is really going to stink.
And you were interim at the time.
I was. And I was talking to my wife and I said, you know, I got good news and bad news. This job's not so bad. And she said, I know, I can tell. And, it was good news because I was enjoying my work. It was bad news, you know, for her potentially that I was going to be in this job for a while. But it's been deeply rewarding, a huge honor, very meaningful work. And, I'm really, really, really pleased to be doing what I'm doing.
Now, I know I'm asking you, and we're not surveying all of the providers,
yes.
but how much better do you think it is now?
Well, we have objective data. We did an employee engagement survey 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and again this year. So we have objective data that it's better, and that's across the organization. And we have objective data that is better for our providers. I can tell you our provider survey that we did a year ago was so bad. It was worse than a Chinese iPad factory. It was terrible. 1%. And so it's better.
1% approval rating?
1% in terms of, this is a Gallup poll. So in terms of many, many different provider groups, we were in the 1 percentile. It's better, but we have a long way to go. Our employees at large, 57th percentile, that's up from 27th percentile. Really meaningful step, but not good enough.
We got a note from a listener who says, I've had two occasions to use the surgical unit at Porter Hospital for day surgery, once before the events you're discussing and the other recently. On both visits, I was very impressed by the efficiency and care the staff showed. I truly hope any problems are being overcome since Porter is a great asset to the area. At the time, about a year and a half ago, Dr. Niffen, the organization terminated contracts with providers and asked them all to sign new ones.
Yep.
And that was a move that was seen as very unfavorable by the providers at the time and led to a lot of the bad blood. How was that resolved?
So what had happened is we had paid our providers forever and ever on a salary basis, and they were sent a letter saying this contract will become null and void in 3 months, and you were welcome to sign this new contract. So we backpedaled on that, put it on hold, but we did revisit it, and we came back to it this fall, and we thought long and hard about it. There were people who said, oh, please don't rip that Band-Aid off. We thought we were probably going to affiliate with UVM, and we thought about, let's just kick this work down the road to somebody else. But in the end, it just felt like the right thing to do. And we spent the winter, a lot of conversations. And when you're talking about people's pay, it's a really, really sensitive issue. And
it wasn't just people's pay, right? It was also, you know, where could you go if you left Porter was one of the issues.
Well, that was a hot issue, something called a restrictive covenant. So a lot of physician contracts have in them what's called a restrictive covenant where it says, if you leave here, you can't practice within 50 miles. We took that out. You just had to get rid of that. We don't want people to leave, but they should stay because it's a great place to work, not because they have something in their contract that says they can't work here. So, you know, it was just a lengthy negotiation process, a lot of one-on-one, two-on-ones, small groups, and we're pretty much there.
And so the new contracts haven't been signed yet, but you
I'm going to say 90%+ of our providers are on what we call the new plan.
And in terms of you mentioned that you've replaced 10 primary care physicians, 40 nurses. Are you fully staffed now?
So we have a primary care opening in Brandon. We're pretty well fully staffed.
This might be a good time to bring in Alice Leo, who joined us on the show in February of last year and is president of the Porter Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals. And she's been listening on the line with us and joins us now. Hello again, Alice.
Hi, Jane.
I'm glad you're back. You were very critical of the administration when we had you on last February. How do you feel today?
So things are better, but I agree with Fred. There's still a lot of room for improvement. Things are getting better, but there's a lot more that needs to be done.
Well, why don't you tick off a few of the things that you and I'll mention here, you are currently in contract negotiations.
Yes.
So I am not going to play arbiter of your contract negotiations, but where do you think things need still improvement?
So when we talk about being fully staffed and about turnover, so Fred has talked a lot within Porter about retention and hanging on to good people. And turnover amongst nurses is still really high. If you look at the first 6 months of 2017, January through June, Porter hired 14 new nurses. Of those 14 new nurses, five of them have already quit. So this issue of retention is really huge.
Alice, is that the case across the board for nursing as a profession? I mean, it's a tough job. It often pays well, but not always. And, you know, I imagine that there's turnover in that job anyway. So what's different at Porter?
Sure. So of those five nurses who have left, I've spoken to four of them and asked them, why did you leave? And there's a common theme with all of them. It has to do with a poor orientation and not feeling safe working in their job and a lack of support from management. So, yes, we are in negotiations right now, and a lot of what we're proposing is to address those issues.
What would make nurses feel safer?
A better orientation.
What does that mean?
So, for example, the role of a preceptor, that's a nurse who trains a new nurse, that's a really key role, and developing that mentorship relationship between those two is really important. So we want to make that better. We're also talking about staffing ratios. So we're proposing that a nurse is assigned to only so many patients. So we would like to have a contractual agreement, So because that's also important to feel like you're not overwhelmed with too many patients.
And what's the ratio you'd like to see?
So for our med-surg unit, what we would like to see is 1-4. Currently, it's around 1-5, but again, there's no guarantee for that. And I do want to point out that there's currently two bills before Congress that would mandate staffing ratios across the country, and currently the state of California is the only state that mandates ratios like this.
So, Dr. Niffen, what do you think about what the nurses are proposing and what Alice Leo is talking about here representing the nurses?
So I'm on the same page with Alice. You know, I talk about how 2016 was about stabilize and rebuild. and 27 needs to be about engage and retain. And we need this for all our employees. I mean, losing the volume of employees that we lost in 2016 is just a terrible way to run the business. So we need to attend to these issues with all of our employees, and we've actually made that a strategic initiative for the year. The orientation process, I agree, is so important. And I know one of the things Alice and I have talked about is travelers. We've had a lot of travelers in the hospital, traveling nurses, and they're expensive. It's been a real considerable expense. And as my financial side wanted to get them out of there as quickly as possible, we had to keep them long enough to train these new nurses, many of whom were young and fresh out of school. So it's a tough balance, but we want to have a great orientation process. We want to have great managers. We want our people to feel valued and respected. And if we do that, we're going to retain people better than we are.
One of the issues, though, that Porter had faced for several years was a shortfall in revenue that wasn't right. Keeping pace with expenses. And Porter was losing about $7 million a year, although that was offset significantly by the 340B drug right. pricing yeah. program, this yeah. federal grant to rural hospitals that offset it by millions every year. Nonetheless, yeah. Porter was losing money. And so part of the change was to institute layoffs and cuts in order to shore up the finances. Can you get to that 4-to-1 ratio that Alice Leo is asking for in the MedSurg unit and still be financially stable?
So I can't speak specifically to 4-to-1 because I simply don't have the subject matter expertise. You know, our strategy this year, so in my first 10 days on the job, I had a short list of people to call, and one of them was Al Gobay. Mr. Gobay was chairman of the Green Mountain Care Board, now commissioner of Health and Human Services. And I called Al. I didn't know him real well. We talked for a few minutes, and I said, Al, you know, can you give me some advice? And his response was, Fred, care for your people. And I was like, well, I thought he was going to tell me to you know, cover our expenses, worry about our debt service coverage, whatever. You know, I said, Al, do you mean our employees or our patients? And he said, yes. So, you know, our strategy this year, it's obviously oversimplified, has been to care for our patients, provide access to the great services we have. We've opened up a couple new service lines. And that has been successful. At the same time, the hardest part of my job is saying no, and that's controlling expense, and our biggest expense is labor. And I've been saying for years, we all have to figure out how to do the same amount of work or more with the same amount of people or less, for the same cost or less. And that will be a chronic ongoing challenge. So in terms of the specific staffing ratio, it's hard for me to say, but we have to work together. We have to work together with our nurses and all of our staff to feel comfortable that we're providing high quality, safe care at a good value to our customers.
Alice, in the past, you felt like there was not a lot of communication, certainly between the administration and providers and nurses. Do you feel like you have a better line of communication, contract negotiations aside, to you know, what's happening at Porter?
Yeah. And so we do meet regularly with management whenever there's an issue, and we address those issues as a union, because we have found over the years that addressing it together as a union, you know, we're able to get further, and Porter needs to sit and talk with us, and they do. I do just want to say, when it comes to the issue, when Fred's talking about doing more with less, so we're hearing that a lot. So just to address that, you know, doing more with less, Porter's mission is to treat people of all ages with compassion and excellence. And that's a great mission that we believe in also, but you can't treat people with excellence if you don't have the people there to do the work. So just to get back again to this importance of staffing ratios, I mean, there's all kinds of studies out there that show with better staffing levels, there's a decrease in hospital-acquired complications, and the length of stay is decreased also. So in the end, it saves on costs. The other thing is other studies also that show that retaining employees is much cheaper than hiring and training new people. So again, you know, you have to put something in. And in the long run, it will pay off.
You know, patient care, you've mentioned, and Dr. Niffen has mentioned, and patient care is obviously the priority. That's what we're all, you know, there for, and why you go into the profession. And there were concerns that patients might not be getting the best care when we talked with you a year and a half ago, if only because there was so much distraction and so much angst, you know, if not staffing levels. So what do you say to potential Porter patients now or current Porter patients?
So we take great care of our patients. You mentioned an email or a letter from somebody who had come into day surgery. That's my unit, and we do. We take excellent care of our patients, and that's our goal, is to continue that and to make it better. And again, we nurses are on the front line. We know what we need to help our patients, and that's what we're asking for. We're asking for the tools that we need to take good care of people. You come to Porter, you will get good care.
Dr. Niffen, do you agree?
I totally agree. And Alice, my relationship with Alice is long and complex. I've known her as I'm a physician and Alice is a nurse. I'm pretty sure you've cared for me or my family.
I have.
Post-operative phase.
I have.
And then we have this current relationship. But again, I think we have more in common in terms of our goals than differences.
And patient care, do you think, has improved or...
I do. I mean, I was here through this entire experience in practicing in the ER, throughout this. And, there's safe care and there's stressed care. Stressed care is when things are really busy, but it's still safe. When you cross that line into unsafe care, that's lights and sirens time. You have to be looking for further resources, kicking that up the line. And, we're always going to have stress care, but I think we're having better and better ways of dealing with it. And yes.
Alice, before I let you go, we have mentioned, and we'll talk more about this coming up with Dr. Niffen, but Porter recently joined the UVM Health Network. What does that affiliation actually mean for nurses?
So on a day-to-day basis, I myself as a staff nurse really haven't noticed any changes at all. Speaking as the president of my local, I'm also unsure how that is going to affect us. There are some things that we're hoping because of the affiliation that will help us. So, for example, the nurses at UVM recently came to a tentative agreement about tuition reimbursement for nurses to obtain their BSN, which is the way of the future for nurses. And we're hoping that that kind of thing will translate into something good for Porter nurses. But on a day-to-day basis, I can tell you as a staff nurse, I don't notice any change.
Well, Alice Leo, president of the Porter Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals, I want to thank you for coming back on the show today.
Thanks so much, Jane.
Today we're talking about Porter Medical Center in Middlebury. This is a checkup of sorts. Last year, the hospital went through a very rocky patch when revenues were down and morale seemed to be down even more. We're talking with President and CEO Fred Niffen, who took over almost a year and a half ago, about how things have changed for the medical center, which includes a hospital, a rehab and senior living facility, and several satellite practices. Porter has also recently joined the UVM Health Network, and we're going to talk a little bit about that in a minute. We got a note from Fran in Weybridge who says, I was one of the patients who lost my primary care physician last year, a loss I still feel very bad about. I have a new doctor who's great, but when I tried to make an appointment 2 weeks ago to follow up on some tests, the earliest date they could offer me was November 22nd. I feel that this is unacceptable and would like to see some more help for the Porter primary practices so they can cut down on these absurdly long waiting times. What do you think about that, Dr. Niffen?
That's a problem. That's what we call access. And access is one of our strategic drivers. It's a big, big issue, and it can mean a lot of different things. It can mean not having enough providers in a specific specialty, or it can mean you have the providers, but you just can't get in to see them for all kinds of reasons. And it's something we've been focused on and trying to improve and getting some objective data that shows we're improving, but obviously we have not completely cracked this nut. So I would say to Fran, call me.
Really?
Call us, yeah. And I'm curious what it is she needs, and perhaps we can facilitate getting things moved forward. But
is that a problem throughout the practices?
Well, it's interesting. Communication has been a big part of this year. And I do what are called road shows. I go out and talk with community groups. And Friday, I was at The Residence, which is a senior living facility. I had about 30 folks there on a Friday afternoon. Things were going really well. So I took a chance. I said, okay, you know, how's everyone doing in terms of primary care? Do you all have doctors? And they all nodded their heads. And I said, can you get in to see them? And they nodded their heads. And they said, and I said, are you happy with them? And they nodded their heads. And I can tell you, a year ago, it was pitchforks. So, you know, things are better. But clearly, we continue to have challenges in some of our primary care offices and some specialty services. So it's something we need to continue to push on.
Let's go to John, who's calling in from Richmond. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. I wanted to expand on the question that you asked Alice before she had to leave, and that's the what Dr. Niffen, in this case, would think about the role of Porter within the network and how, not in the, necessarily in the short term, because these things take time, but where he sees the network affecting Addison County in terms of healthcare and how access to the network changes how Porter does business. I'm just kind of asking to look in his crystal ball and see where he thinks things might be going based on what he's learned.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for that question, John. And Dr. Niffen, maybe you can actually explain what an affiliation or what being part of the UVM network means.
So it's called, the technical name is a sole member substitution. We remain our own independent organization, but it is a formal affiliation agreement. You know, I think, I mean, the question I get a lot, and I think the question that John's asking here is, well, how is it going and what do you think the future is? The how is it going piece, it's going well. And to understand, to measure objectively how this is going, how we're going to succeed or not, you have to look at why we did it. You know, and I think one of the issues that comes up a lot was that it was, you know, it was money. It was all about the money. And in fact, the day we signed our papers, we had 100 days cash on hand, which is not a wealthy organization, but it's a stable organization. So yes, you know, bullet point number three is there are some financial advantages, but this was really about what's best for our patients. And the organization, the board of directors, the management team, the medical staff, our employees, our community, we discussed this for a year, and it was always about what would be best for our local hospital and the patients we serve. You know, so bullet point number one, integration. And again, Jane, I know your father's a patient in our service area.
As am I.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get personal here.
<Uh-oh>.
You go to a doctor, your health information is in that electronic medical record. If you get sick and injured and go to the ER, it's in a second record. If you're really sick and injured and you wind up in the hospital, that's a third record. If you need a little rehab before you go home and you go to Helen Porter, that's a fourth record. If you need home health, that's a fifth record. If in your free time you want to get a consultation at UVM, that's a sixth electronic medical record. They don't communicate.
Or if you go to the acute,
right?
You know,
that one,
trauma care.
Right. So there's a little bit of communication between the office and the hospital, but they generally don't communicate. And this is not a Porter specific problem. This is a national problem. Through affiliation, we're all going to have one electronic medical record. This is not just convenience. This is patient safety. When you transfer an elderly person's medication list six times manually, you're setting yourself up for failure, for medical error, and that's unacceptable. We shouldn't accept it. We need to fix that. If the CON is approved, we have plans to move forward, make the whole swath up and down Route 7 in the Champlain Valley epic, and our information will flow seamlessly.
Does that mean it flows to Rutland as well? Because your UVM Health Network, sure.
Right.
I mean, we know that that's the largest health network,
right.
And it's buying up practices like
right.
crazy. But if, you know, many Porter patients go down to Rutland for
right.
various different types of care as well.
So it's a good news, bad news story. The good news is it'll cover Chittenden County, Addison County, Washington County. I mean, that's 240,000 patients. That's a good swag of the state's population, but no, we won't be, you know, Northwestern to the north and Rutland to the south. We'll stay on their EMRs.
Let's go to Eric, who's calling in from White River Junction. Hi, Eric. Go right ahead.
Hi. I'm not actually in Porter's service area, but I do have some questions for Fred. I heard he mentioned that he's asking staff to do more with fewer people, to do more work. I'm a Medicaid patient. I hear this from my I work multiple part-time jobs, and I hear this often as an excuse to not hire more people. So I want to know what Porter is doing to rein in administrative costs, particularly administrator salaries, which sometimes, you know, reach six-figure salaries, while medical professionals leave places like Porter. This seems to be a huge problem across the medical industry.
Yeah, Eric, thanks for your question. I appreciate it. Dr. Niffen?
So I guess I want to say, yes, we're trying to do the same or better work with the same or less people, but we have to draw a line of patient safety. So let me make that clear. You know, in terms of administrative costs, this is another benefit of the affiliation. And I had four vice presidents turn over this year. And there are two vice president positions we chose not to fill. And we chose not to fill them to keep our expenses down, and because we can get that support through the network. So, you know, we're doing what we can, but there is some administrative expense to running a $90 million enterprise.
One of the problems, though, that Porter had been facing and that precipitated those cuts that I talked about earlier at the beginning of 2016, the layoffs and other efficiencies that were being attempted, was because Porter was losing, as I said, about $7 million a year and getting some money back through federal grants. What's the financial situation this year? You're almost through the fiscal year.
So we're having a much better year. All of our financial metrics are improving. We finished the third quarter just better than breaking even on operations. And then when you add our 340B in, we had about a $3 million margin. So we have one more quarter to go, but I would be delighted to finish out the year as we are now.
So that would be the first year in several that you'd be in the black.
At least five, yes.
Does that suggest that the cuts that were made that were so painful a year and a half ago were actually the right ones to be made?
Well, some of them – so this is – Jane, this is wildly unpopular to say. We'll probably get some phone calls. But some of the cuts that were made probably needed to be made. Had I been in charge, I think I would hope that there would have been better communication and a more incremental and a more surgical approach to things. But the reduction in expenses that we suffered through, that we bled Porter blood over, has been a part of our improved financial performance.
It always struck me, and I have no proof of this, so I'll ask you it as a question, but it struck me that perhaps a new CEO was brought in 2015 to do just what that CEO did, which was to make very unpopular cuts and be vilified and then leave, with the medical center perhaps knowing that it could make those cuts and then have a better, coming together after having made them. Was that the plan of the hospital? And you have now taken over as the person who gets to come and make things right again?
I don't think we're that smart, Jane. No. Again, the hiring and firing of this chief executive is a board decision. We have a great board. I mean, I call them our best and brightest. You know, it's a great community. And our board is made up of really smart people who take a lot of their time to support this important community resource. And I think they really honestly brought the CEO in to do an outstanding job and stay for as long as she would stay. Yes, I don't think this was definitely not expected.
Does uncertainty over changes in federal health care policy have any impact on what's happening at Porter?
I mean, it weighs on us. It's hard to say it has impact. We're not really changing what we do other than trying to, be as successful as possible to brace ourselves for any changes that may come. But it weighs on us. And we follow what's happening in Washington and we angst about it. But it's not actionable information at this time.
I mean, there are changes to insurance premiums and things like that because of uncertainty. Does having changes in what's happening with private insurance have any impact on you, or is it really just the federal reimbursement levels that impact your hospital more?
You know, I would say so far so good. We negotiate contracts with third-party payers every year. We have our first budget in our recorded history of 14 years, so we're not raising prices. So far, we have not had any major shockwaves.
You mentioned a few minutes ago that one of the ways that you shored up nursing shortages was by hiring traveling nurses.
Yes.
And that those are more expensive and, you know, they're designed to be short-term contracts. Is being affiliated with UVM able to provide you with efficiencies in terms of staffing? Can you rotate staffing in any way through this affiliation?
I would, Jane, I would love to. And we haven't quite crossed that bridge yet. That would be a great thing. But we have not yet talked about it.
You're an ER doctor, and I understand you still do a shift every week in the ER. Do you miss doing more hands-on practicing?
I do. I do. I mean, being, you know, providing care for people is just such a huge privilege. It is, and friends and neighbors, it is just the best job in the world. But in my new job, I've learned that I can pull levers and do things that affect big numbers of patients, more patients than I can treat, no matter how many shifts I work. So I do miss it a bit, but this is good.
You don't find that people are trying to get off their shift when they work with you, working with the big boss now? I mean, that's a lot of pressure.
I am told that it gets really quiet down there. And I just feel like I'm one of the people. And that's how I try and roll on my ER day. But I'm told I get some special treatment and that the conversation tempers a bit.
Everybody's on their best behavior.
They always behave well.
That's Porter Medical Center President and CEO, Dr. Fred Niffen. Thanks very much for telling us a little bit more about what's happening at Porter these days. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Jane. I appreciate it.